This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Hello, everybody. This is Patricia W. Fisher with Readers Entertainment Radio here on Thursday, the 25th of April. And as I always love to call it, Miss Rhode Island Day, because it is the perfect day. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. And all you need is a light jacket. So we're super excited for that line from Miss Congeniality. And then we also have this month is Black Women's History Month. So do you know who Shirley Chisholm is? Do you know who Althea, I'm sorry, I want to get her name right, Althea Gibson or Dorothy Height or, of course, Rosa Parks or Augusta Savage, Harriet Tubman, Phyllis Wheatley, and so many other women that have made history? If you don't know who they are, you need to look them up. And there's plenty of fabulous books out there to find out about these ladies. And one fabulous book we're going to talk about today is by my friend Sue Ann Farrell, who is a best-selling author. She discovered romance novels in her aunt's hidden stash one summer as a teenager, and from that moment on, she was hooked. So she has written over 13 novels, been an Amazon bestseller. She writes really amazing thrillers and wonderful characters. She's currently working on more books for the Edgar Family series. If you haven't read those, please pick one up. The first one is Free, I believe, Kidnapped, and a Western series as well. She writes her sexy stories, whether they are keep you on the edge of your romantic suspense seat or in heartwarming small-town stories. They'll keep you thinking about her characters long after that happily ever after is achieved. You can find her at her website, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Goodreads. All of those links are in the write-up of the show. Welcome, Ms. Suzanne. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Patricia?
I'm fine. So I had the great fortune of meeting Suzanne years ago at Romance Writers of America.
Yeah, they made the mistake of sitting us beside each other.
They did.
And we did nothing but talk.
We did, and I believe we did sign a few books, but we did have a lot of fun conversing back and forth. Suzanne, like myself, is a nurse, or now both of us are retired. You worked what unit?
I was labor and delivery.
Yeah, that
and
was the unit
well,
I didn't work.
I started out in postpartum, and then I moved into high-risk labor and delivery and stayed there for another 25 years. So, yeah, after 34 years, I kind of said, you know, I'm done.
Yeah. And now you're doing the writing full time.
I am, and I am enjoying making stories and letting my characters kind of take me on these adventures.
So I know that everybody always asks people where they get their ideas, but you probably never had a shortage of them because of where you worked, I would assume.
Working in obstetrics, you see people at their best and their worst, and there are a lot of interesting things and characters that come in and out of your life in that field. But I think one of the things is it shows you the strength of women, that even somebody who is not like a firefighter or a policeman, somebody who's an average everyday person, it can be just a single mom. It can be a mom of six. It can be somebody who is a nurse. I think nurses can make the best heroines. Personally, have seen them, you know, step up in times of crisis. And
yes.
I think that helps when you let the characters just be who they're going to be. You're trying to make them realistic and three-dimensional, and try not to get in their way as they lead you through this story.
Right.
Now, the newest book that came out, that was kind of a sideways trip into ideas. I was approached to do a pirate book, which sort of threw me for a loop because I don't write pirates.
Right.
And I thought, well, how do I take this and put it into my series? How do I make it connect to the books I already have? It was supposed
right.
to be a big
and tell
project.
Me the name of the, tell me the title of your newest book.
Well, it's called Shanghaied.
Right. Okay.
And I was going to have my hero be an undercover officer looking for people that were smuggling. And as I did okay. thought about the story, the more I thought it would make more sense if it was like set in World War II, because at the time I was also reading an article on or a magazine about spies that were in America, German and mm-hmm. spies in World War II. And I thought, well, what if he is pretending to be a smuggler, but trying to find German spies who were coming on the coast along the eastern seaboard, because there were a lot of U-boats, which I found out during my research. There's a lot of research for that book. But there mm-hmm. were lots of U-boats right off the coast of North Carolina. So, of course, I set my book
yes.
in North Carolina.
Well, and I find that interesting because I remember when the researchers started finding stuff and people started really going, wow, they got a lot closer than people anticipated. And I think people were a little bit shaken by that, that idea that those U-boats got so close. So, yeah, your research, yeah, that's wonderful.
And then I found out that there was an actual emergency shipyards were built. And one of them was mm-hmm. in Wilmington, North Carolina. So I just kind of moved a little further down inland and in the coast there off of Cape Fear and set my little place. And I named the bar the Shanghaied. So the title sort of fit the book.
Right.
Because nobody really gets Shanghaied. It all takes place around that bar.
Okay.
And then I made the characters the grandparents of the Edgars.
So, right. So this is absolutely a prequel to your Edgar series, Edgar family series.
Right.
And that's exciting because so it's book five, but then we kind of get an idea of the characters that have come before your series here. And that's really cool.
Well, I'm hoping, and it looks like I'll be starting a second one in this sort of mini prequel series. And these spy chasers, is what I'm calling them, are
okay.
going to kind of visit some interesting spots during the early years of the war. I think
wow.
they're going to be in England when Pearl Harbor gets hit. They're
okay.
on a mission in
okay.
England. So that's kind of the next step for that series. But it was a really interesting way. The project fell through, but I had this great story, and I just kept plugging away, and it turned out to be really fun.
So we're going to jump back a bit. So you discovered these romance novels in your aunt's house. Do you,
yeah.
when that started your love of romance, were you a big reader before that? Had you just run out of things to read and you found these books, or was this just by chance you finding them?
I was one of the – I was that kid that always went over their limit at the library.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say, well, you can only take five books. And my mom would say, you may as well let her take three times that. She'll have them all read by tomorrow or something.
Right.
And I always returned my books and I always got more. But one summer I found some Barbara Cartlands. My aunts were big on reading books. And
okay.
They let me bring them all home. And then every father who complained about me reading all the time, he would always leave a spot in the trunk of the car, because we always brought back all kinds of things from Tennessee, where my aunts lived. We would canned goods and bushels of apples. And he always saved one little spot when we were packing the trunk of the car. And I'd bring this big bag full of books, and he'd find a spot for it and say, well, your summer's set.
Right.
But that's a sweet
little
memory. So he complained
memory.
About me reading, but he always left me a spot. So, and I think my aunts sort of culled their books so that I only got sweet romances and sweet harlequins and Grace Livingston.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what was her? think, I can't remember, there's a third name in there, Grace something Livingston, who wrote the, she wrote a lot of historical, sort of the pre-Christian romances. Grace
okay.
Livingston Hill, that's her name. And
okay.
So I always read those two. They were really, they were a lot of history, to sort of around 1900 to about 1930.
And so you're reading all of these wonderful books. When did you graduate to the more saucy reads?
The day I found The Flame and the Flower. And then my mom found it. Then my mom, well, but about a week before that, my mom found me reading Mario Puzo's The Godfather, and I was well past page 49, so.
Okay.
And that was a very infamous scene, page 49 of Mario Puzo's Godfather. So she figured she may as well just let me read whatever if I was already there.
Right. Well, you've already passed that. No use trying to keep it from you now. So.
Yeah.
And
I read everything. I read all through school. I was a kid sitting in history class with my history book standing up straight, and inside I tucked a romance novel. And I thought I was the only one getting by in that until I looked over and my friend Amy was doing the same thing. Our history teacher was 72 years old.
She was just counting the days for retirement, I guess.
Yeah, so, you know, we were in the corner. We were good.
Right, you weren't causing any trouble, so my guess is that she just kind of let you fly. She probably knew you were doing it, too.
Well, yeah, it's the only time I was quiet in the class, probably.
So you go to school, you earn your nursing degree, and now...
Yeah, and in nursing school, I was, I remember, this is, my mom called me one time, and she said, I was studying for like microbiology, and she said, don't go to the store, just come straight, you're just going to come straight home. And I said, why? And she goes, well, I have Catherine Woodweese's Shanna, and you don't need to read it. You need to finish your finals and then come on home. I'll save the book for you.
Oh, wow.
Because she knew I was going to read it.
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah. That was always the frustrating part, is seeing those books during school. And you're like, oh, I want to get that. But you know, if you do, you won't study anything.
And
else.
You know, it's finals week, you got to get that done. So yeah, I came in, dropped my stuff in the front room, because I lived at the dorms, I was home for the summer, grabbed the book, and my dad said, well, I see her stuff, where is she? Like at dinner time, mom says she's reading, she'll be down when she's done.
Right, so she'll talk to you later, pops.
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah, I remember doing that, like that reward. You know, you finish that semester, and it was just like taking a big bite of cake and just eating it all in one sitting. It was, there's just nothing like a good book like that.
Yeah, but you've earned it after a semester of nursing school, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you know what I found was very interesting going through is that there – is this feeling of trying to do everything perfectly, and you're in class and you're doing all this paperwork, and you would see people who would be really, really amazing nurses on paper, and then you would actually deal with real people. And it was very interesting to see the nurses who did better with people than on paper, just like what they could handle. It seems like there was a shift in it. And I don't know why.
Yeah, you had to take what you were learning and actually be able to process it into not only the physical aspect of doing the job, but the emotional, mental job too. And
right.
Some people just couldn't move past the, I have to do every detail. Sometimes you know you're supposed to do something one way, and circumstances say, well, we're going to do it this way because it's going to work. And you have to be able to, you have to sort of learn to think on your feet.
Yes.
And some teachers help you with that, and some never get it.
Right. And I think it's essential. I know a lot of the teachers I had So I got my LVN first or my LPN first, and then my RN. And my teachers, as well intentioned as they were, a lot of them had been school nurses for years. And so to deal with an unruly patient at 2 in the morning on the med-surg floor, they just didn't have a clue. I don't think you probably see this as much on obstetrics, so it'd be Jen, but when you work med-surg or ER, ICU, the first thing, of course, people do when they get confused is they strip all their clothes off. And, of course, OB-GYN, of course, you're coming in, and that's kind of a, we've got to check you. It's not like they're excited about it.
I've had more than one woman deliver naked, trust me. They strip down there,
too. Oh, I'm sure
you did. Because well, that stress and pain will make them do things.
Well, and I was laughing because the funniest story I ever heard, you know, my mom told me by the time you have the baby, the whole city of Austin could walk through and you wouldn't care. My friend Maria was just so stressed out and trying to have her first baby, and people had been coming in and out of the room. And so this gentleman walked in to, you know, she's like, all right. And, she, you know, she throws the cover back, and she's sitting there, and he's like, no, I'm just here to get the garbage. She was like, oh, whatever. Like, no embarrassment at all. So it's definitely as a friend of mine put, that you're definitely on the pulse of humanity in on the floor you're working. And
yeah.
I'm sure, like you said, you pull those kind of characters into your stories.
You have to be careful.
What has been,
like, I've had people
for sure.
say you should write stories about your patients, and then like, no. Because sometimes what I think funny, the patient might not have thought was funny.
Sure. Yeah, there's definitely a different sense of humor, for sure.
And people would not believe. I mean, fiction is truer than real life. I mean, I think in fiction, you have to make it believable. But in real life, weird crap happens and nobody would ever believe it. And it just happens, you know.
It does.
But, yeah, I think being a nurse lets you tap into the human emotions and way people react and their strengths and their weaknesses. And as
right.
a writer, then you can take that and let it mold your characters.
So you're working as an OB nurse. When did you decide that you wanted to write these stories? I mean, what was the catalyst that took you there?
Well, you know, I worked nights. And sometimes I would have patients that were sleeping. They were in an early induction and not much was going on for a few hours. And we would have these sort of moments of downtime. And
sure.
I often would have a book there so I could watch the monitors, because the monitors sometimes would tell you things were going on before the patient ever did. So I'd position
sure.
myself in front of a monitor, have a book. Other nurses would be talking or doing their thing and questions of me, because being older, they'd ask questions. But a lot of times I would read. Well, sometimes I didn't have anything left to read because I'd finished it. And I'd pull out some
mm-hmm.
paper and just kind of just jot down a story idea. Well,
mm-hmm.
one night I managed to write 5 pages by hand. I thought, oh, that's pretty good. And we had a brand new computer. This is back in 1995 when I started. And so I went home, and I wasn't a very good typist. I had taken typing in high school but thought, ugh. But I was a piano player. So I sat
okay.
down and I sort of hunt-and-pecked my way through this, and I realized I had a scene. A whole entire scene. Problem was, it was like in the middle of a book. Like, I had
okay,
this pregnant
yeah.
woman escaping this murderer and going up a mountainside. So, of course, I'm like, well, how? Who's the father? Why is this murderer chasing her? And why is she fleeing?
Yeah, where is she going?
So now I'm hooked. I'm curious as to what this character is. And so I go back and I kind of write this story. And in about 3 months' time, I had a 90,000-word story.
Oh, wow.
Which needed horrendous editing because I didn't know what I was doing. But I was just trying to tell this story. It's, you know, one of those stories that hits you and you just have to keep writing till it's done because, and I think that's what happens with a lot of writers. You get this one story, and you have to tell this story. And the characters become more real to you the more you write about them. That story ended up getting edited 3 times before it went to a professional editor and was in actually my fourth book that got published, and it's called Cantrell's Bride. So she ended up being a mail order bride who had witnessed a murder in Washington, D.C. of a senator.
Okay.
And so then when I finished that story, there was a second one that came right behind it. It's sort of like a sequel. And I self-published that one called Turner's Vision. And so I have this 2 American historical books. And then I shifted gears into romantic suspense. And apparently I can't write a book that something suspenseful doesn't happen in, you know, murders, dead bodies. Doesn't matter the time period. I will kill somebody off.
And you know how. You know how.
Yes. I will make them die. And I have a friend who used to be.
Oh, you've got 3 different series. So you've got the Edgar's Family Novels, that's your romantic suspense. And then you have your Western series, your small town romances. And now you have your American historicals, the one, Cantrell's Bride, the one that you, your first book. And so you've got like this wonderful, you know, variation of books, but with these really strong, fabulous characters in there. So you've got something for someone who wants, they want historicals, they want suspense, they want, you know, small town. I mean, you've got, you know, this really great wealth of reads here for pretty much any author or any reader out there.
I know. And the fun part about that is it lets me, every new book is like, I shift between the different series. Right now, mostly the Edgar's book and the Weston books because those people are, you know, there's less research. The historicals, I have to do a lot more research. And I'm back in Weston now working on a series for that, and I have just the cutest little character in it. And this series is laid back, but it still has suspense elements in it. But because it's a small town, I can let the characters be funny and kind of small townish and laid back, and there's more interaction between them. Whereas the Edgar's books kind of start out with something suspenseful at the very beginning, and the timeline is much shorter, usually just a few days. Whereas the Weston books can take place over a few days or a week or two if I want.
Right. And then you have the first book of your series for free, correct? So each of the series is free.
The first book is free. I figure that I'm like a drug dealer for readers. I'll give you the first hit free, and after that, hopefully the characters will make you want to read more. I generally don't do – every now and then I'll leave a book with kind of a hook at the end of it, but I do try to – resolve the actual the actual suspense element and the romance of that particular book in that book. Sometimes I'll leave it a line that maybe there's something else by a secondary character coming up, or there's you know, things coming up, and I try to let secondary characters for the next book come to the forefront a little bit in the story. The characters that are in this new book, Daniel and Melissa, were in previous books. Daniel's a deputy. Melissa is a survivor of domestic abuse. And then there's this little girl named Lexi. And so they were all in previous books in the Weston series. And so now they've kind of, now it's their turn to have a story.
Have you
and
been
then,
surprised?
While I'm,
oh, go ahead. And then
while I'm writing this one, I will let another group of characters kind of come forward, and they'll give me their story, and we'll move forward with them.
Have you been surprised with the response from readers of which characters they want to hear about next? or has it gone, you know, I mean, even characters you're like, I didn't plan to write anything about them, but okay. You know, it does, what has been your biggest surprise?
In the Weston books, I wrote a character named Cletus. I describe Cletus as being Barney Fife meets RoboCop. I mean, he's like, he's a big man. He's got the heart of a teenager and the body of an NFL lineman. And his name is Cletus.
Okay.
I had no plans for Cletus to ever be a romance character. And he appears in all the books. He's a deputy sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second book, Close to the Edge, after I wrote him into that book, I started getting emails. When is Cletus going to have a story? Is Cletus going to get a love interest? And you're sort of like, his name is Cletus. But what I kept getting this, and so I started letting him have a little romance with the hairdresser named Sylvie, and she's about as big as a pixie, and she's got bright, spiky red hair. And it came about that I decided to put him in a novella, because Cletus wasn't going to carry a 50,000 or 60 to 90,000 word story. But I thought a novella he could do. So I let him play Santa Claus to the whole town every year. And the year Sylvie comes to town, she plays his elf.
That's cute.
And so, and there is a little romance going, and there is a sex scene, but I let it take place off page because I just can't vision Cletus. I can't write it. I'm just not going to. So I always tell writers these days. I tell my readers nowadays, when you name a secondary character, make sure it's a name you can live with because your readers may want that story.
Right. It's fun how readers will connect to characters, and even though I think as writers we figure we've told their story, it's interesting. It's always interesting to get readers' perspective of, no, I want more. And that's got to be a big compliment.
It is. It is. In the Edgar's books, I put in a U.S. Marshal. He's not related in any way to the Edgar's family. And he appears in Hunted. And he just kind of gelled in that sort of, I'm a professional, you're a professional, let's beat each other up and be friends kind of way that guys seem to do. And as he appeared then in the book Seized, and then he was there and Vanished, and each book he just kind of developed. And so by the time I finished all four of the Edgar's books, I wanted to keep going with the series, and it just seemed a natural progression, and I was getting emails from everyone, you know, is Frank going to have a story? And I thought, what is the one thing that Frank really probably as a marshal hated? And to me, it was the paparazzi photographers, because, you know, he's trying to protect people, and these people are all in their face. And so, of course, naturally, I gave him a heroine that was a photographer. And on top of it, she was a fashion photographer. So he was like, I really have no use for you. And yet, the moment her house explodes, and he's there with her, he goes into protector mode. An interesting thing about Frank is if he could say things with a grunt, he would. And she quickly realizes that he will have whole one-word conversations. And the more I wrote it, the funnier it got to me.
I thought, I don't know
if the readers are going to like it. I didn't know if the readers were going to like it, but I was laughing myself silly. Because it would start out with one sentence and then a couple of words. And when she got down to one word, she's like, okay, now we're in caveman mode. So I thought
she
was very sarcastic in her head with him.
Well, I love
that. And
then
she starts giving it back to him. And he
a little bit of a man.
He smiles a lot. But you could tell he was enjoying that. So they were a fun couple. It's fun when you put the right characters together, what they do to each other.
For sure. So if you've been listening to Readers Entertainment Radio, this is Patricia W. Fisher talking with author Sue Ann Farrell. She is at her website, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Goodreads. Her newest book, Shanghai, is a prequel to her Edgar family series. And she's got a ton of books out there for you to check out, so please check her out. Thank you so much for coming on again, Suzanne.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being there. Thanks, Patricia.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.